Blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutyambi Tatyambi Sabha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyambi Tatyambi Sabha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dutyambi Tatyambi Sabha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Sangaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajñā paramita hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. For is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the continents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By my passionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by my passionate speech that makes for clarity, by my compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by a compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by my passionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by my compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to mimic or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in the bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry of the correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I'm born karma. I'm heir to karma. karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi datyampi sabha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
What shall we look at this morning? Rebecca.
Well, I'll start us off. I've been looking at karma, and an image that has dropped in that I think it would be fun for me anyway to explore is this image of a slinky.
An image of a slinky.
Yeah, do you know the toy?
Yeah.
Okay. And, what triggered that image was something that came through on my recording that, and then I didn't use the word karma, but it was something, a reading that I had recorded a long time ago about, it's a spiral, something like, you know, we grow as a spiral, and any point along that way, we can kind of force. So when we're a child, it's like here, right? And then the spirals up, and we can get back to that exact same point, but immeasurably deeper or broader.
Mm-hmm. Different levels.
Levels. And so I find that true about all these content areas, relationships, or food or money or anything. So it'll cycle back around, and then I'll get to see something that seems to encompass everything I've ever seen before. But so it's this, and really often the same experiences, the same feelings, the same thoughts will be there, but it will arise in a totally different sense of awareness, an expanded sense of awareness.
So let's see if I'm with you. So it feels like the content, there's only that much content, relationships, finances, whatever. There's a finite series, finite content, finite karma, and yet every time we encounter it, there's an experience of the familiarity of that karma in that content. But there's an awareness of a different relationship with it in what you see. And if I'm tracking what you're saying, it's an awareness at any one time with a piece of content and karma gets included, it gets transcended, and then included in the next time that you encounter it. So the sum of your experiences with that content, with the practicing with that content, is available, and there's more to see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the reason that is such a good news system, not like, oh, here it is again, right? So like at 3 o'clock...
Well, it can be like that if that's our relationship to it.
Well, that's true. That's a very subtle point, too. So like, let's say at 3 o'clock on the slinky, there's the food karma. You know, and so here I am living my life, going around, and then I hit 3 o'clock. Okay, here it's coming up again. And And so then, as you said, I can either feel like, really? Mm-hmm. Why this again? I thought I had put it to bed, you know, down three spirals ago, mm-hmm. right? But it kind of possesses that space there at 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as I live my life, it's absolutely fine mm-hmm. that it's there. That just seems to be how it is. Mm-hmm. In fact, every time I come around to it, if I am practicing with it, and for lack of, you know, just, I know this image has its limitations, but am spiraling up, it actually can make me more useful mm-hmm. in the world to have encountered it again, to mm-hmm. be at 3 o'clock on the spiral again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think what you're saying is, as we practice, what we recognize is patterns of practice, mm-hmm. right? Because we keep encountering the same things, but what changes is our orientation towards them. Mm-hmm. And so there's a certain level of, okay, well, I know what this is, and I'm eager and excited to see what else is there for me to see. Mm-hmm. It's not a problem.
Yeah.
Karma ceases to be a problem. It's just what we have to encounter in order to transcend. And we often say this in practice, you're not done till you're done.
Yeah. And right? even, if, well, and see, that even touches on a belief and assumption that was held in place, which is that being done means I'll never hit 3 o'clock food karma again.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want that to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I'm done with it. It's,
uh-huh.
you know,
yes.
I can
yes.
kind of compare it or project onto how Sherry talks about smoking. You know, that I would just venture to say there's like almost zero chance she'll ever go back to smoking, right? We can just project that, right? But I've heard her say things about it, like sometimes it's just still like it'll come up in a conversation in group or whatever, and there it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so the belief that I'm recognizing is that I inserts this sense that needs to go.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So the awareness that you're looking at is, oh no, the belief that you're looking at that you want to let go of is this feeling that there is something that needs to be gotten over or done, and that if it cycles back again at 3 o'clock, and it's food again, that there's something wrong with that. The awareness that you're, I think, closing in on, or project you're closing in on, is nothing is, I mean, there's no problem with anything. That's basically it. And that there's a way in which if we keep practicing with whatever we're practicing, what increases is the practice, which is what makes us useful.
Yeah.
Not in that conditioned orientation, that believed or unexamined assumption that we're practicing towards an outcome about a piece of content.
Right.
So your context is widening.
Yes.
Whatever the content is.
Yes. And this morning I was doing a lot of listening, and I recognized some really old recordings came up, and I recognized the brutality of self-hate that used to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And so that expanded my image of the slinky again, in that it goes in the other way too. Because, let me see if I can be clear about what I saw, that it also spirals down, in the sense that conditioning used to be able to be just nasty, brutal in my face. And as I've practiced, it's gotten more, I guess, it's gotten more subtle because, I know it's gotten more subtle because that kind of in-my-face stuff is just not as dominant anymore. But I have plenty of reason to believe that it's still doing what it's doing. And so it too evokes this great compassion for the emptiness in the middle of the slinky that keeps on with life, that just keeps on noticing, that keeps being aware of everything
mm-hmm.
not believing anything, paying attention, not taking it personally. Mm-hmm. And in that way, sort of traveling with life. Mm-hmm. Through whatever process is here.
So the observation is that even though self-hate is less brutal, it is still there, or can get you in much more subtle ways. And so there's the awareness that there's the awareness of transcendence on one side and descent on the other. And it's that place of when we're suffering, we know that it's possible not to suffer, and when we're not suffering, we know it's possible to suffer. And so there's a tremendous sense of awareness which could translate into compassion for our journey through that. Mm-hmm. And an awareness I project also that the awareness is always traveling along with the karma, right? That the karma is not just what you have to transcend, but the ability to transcend it too.
Yes, yes.
And it's the dance between the two that we ride the journey of. And so thinking that, that what you encounter as a problem is what changes. It's just what's there as an opportunity, as a gift.
Yes. Well, and one last point that's coming back to me as we talk is the thing that was in the heart of that initial reading that came through on my recording that spurred all this kind of looking was that first we are children. We're children. Mm-hmm. And what's possible is as we mature and kind of ascend through the slinky, we get to that childlike place again, but with so much more awareness and wherewithal and experience and everything, mm-hmm. that it is so blessed to get to that place. So, you know, an example of the food thing is like that just delight and joy that I had as a child with food before I knew about calories and fat grams and cholesterol and all of that kind of stuff is possible to live at now with the understanding of calories and cholesterol and fat grams and all of that. But not with self-hate, mm-hmm. with that childlike joy still intact.
It's the Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh quote, right? Innocence in childhood doesn't come with awareness, but innocence that comes with awareness is blessed, because you have to go through whatever you go through in order for that innocence to be veiled, and then when you move through the veil, then you recapture that surprise of joy, right? We recapture that sense of innocence that is not affected by conditioning. So the experience isn't tainted anymore. Mm-hmm. It has all the breadth of what we went through to get back to that innocence, and therefore it's so much more precious.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that the ability to be delighted in the presence of, and I project to make choices from the heart, to make choices from the innocence that affirm the innocence, rather than feel like there's a deprivation associated with some piece of knowledge that creates a standard of shoulds that you've been tortured by.
Exactly.
So now I know about calories, and I still choose to be delighted by what's available for me to eat.
Yep.
Because I trust my practice and that life-affirming calibration to make the choices that benefit me. Not listen to a voice that says, I'm not going to eat this because I should not, and then eat it and feel bad because I shouldn't.
Yes. Yeah. And as a child, I pretty much was, I did have to eat whatever somebody else put in front of me. Mm-hmm. But now that mentor, that whoever's putting it in front of me gets to be life.
Yeah.
Gets to be, either the, so the whole, because of the great privilege that I enjoy, there's just no end to what could be put in front of me.
And, yeah.
And that is a truly amazing, joyful place.
Uh-huh. So what drops in when you said that is the choice we have is from freedom. Because what we're free from is the conditioning. So whatever is put in front of me is something that I appreciate. So there's the innocence in freedom, as opposed to a childhood place where there is innocence, But again, that knowledge of choice that we are, that we can come from, not I don't want to eat Brussels sprouts, but I really want to eat chocolate and I can't, wah, whatever. You know, that's a very, very different experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. Benny.
I just saw something in that I think I sort of half articulated, that conditioning stays the same and is always trying to say this has to end.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't end. Uh-huh. Especially if we try to end it.
Yes. So conditioning saying this has to end even if it never ends.
Well, it won't end voluntarily. I mean, it's the same. And what's always funny is too is this has to change. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. But what's new and does what is new in every moment is just the awareness. And when the awareness, when this awareness has happened, it ends. And uh-huh. then there's another awareness and it ends. Uh-huh. And it's just the opposite of what we're told.
Uh-huh.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Intuitively, I follow. I'm not correct.
Intuitively, I sort of sense it.
So if I'm following you, it's a scam. So life is always changing.
Yeah.
And there is an end in every moment. And so if we're with that pace of life, then we're aware of change that's happening all the time. And that awareness can call a process that says things have to change but is the same. Because there's a recognition that that's exactly opposite to what is being stated by that process, mm-hmm. and can be experienced if we are not in that process.
And when we're in that process, we buy it and we think somehow we can end this.
Yeah, end the process. I mean, that is
just
the same.
It's just another example of how we're being pointed to the wrong thing all the time.
Yeah, it's just the opposite.
But when we're new to that, I mean, it's just so interesting. What does end is the awareness, that awareness.
Yeah.
That ends. And that awareness ends. Mm-hmm. And that awareness ends. Mm-hmm. But conditioning just goes on and on and on and tells us we have to end it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same, it does not change. It tells us to end it even if it doesn't end,
right.
Because it is the same all the time.
Yeah.
And then points to ending it as this quest,
yeah.
which we can just get looped into over and over and over again.
And then it doesn't end.
And it doesn't end. Till we end it by going into the moment and are conscious of the end of the moment.
Exactly.
And then the next moment.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's paradoxical. No wonder we can't get it from here.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Thank you. Jen.
Boy, that feels like it's all pointing at something I've been looking at. You used a phrase a few minutes ago, something like calibrating to the choice. I can't remember how you said it.
I can't either.
No. I was repeating it, but anyway. Just that, exactly what was just talked about, that I was reporting about it this morning, so I was also listening to recordings this morning on Shuffle, and it's an amazing gift. I mean, there's just a library back there of unbelievable recordings from all different things. So all these old recordings are coming up, years and years and years ago, and on one of them I heard myself say, God, it's been an entire week. You know, it's been so long since that karma has come up, that came up this morning. I'm describing it, and she's saying, like, it's been so long, it's been a week. And I'm like, a week? Wow. And it's very rare that really strong karma that she's describing in that recording comes up now. So it was just one of those really fun kind of mirrors to look into. But again, I'm not sure also I can articulate it, but it was very similar to what I was hearing in that last conversation of, as I was recording this morning, seeing all these things from these different old recordings that I was hearing, that the thing that keeps it in place is trying to dismantle it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that what the reason that phrase that you used of calibrating to the choice jumped out at me is that what I realized is that when we practice for some length of time and we have a recording and listening practice and we have those recordings to listen back to, there's such a wealth of experience for insight to call on, and that it's so clear Okay, so I'll just use communication as an example. So I'm writing an email, and there'll just be this calibration of, you know, just this sense of, as I'm writing it, the minute any kind of I comes into it, whether I have an agenda, there's something I want, I'm, quote, confused, I need help, any kind of identity comes into it, there's such a, just a, just that sense of there it is. Mm-hmm. But often, I don't get it. I don't understand. So even though there's that time, that ability to calibrate, it then goes right up to conditioned mind to figure out, well, why is that? What is it about that that's not there? And then it goes right into conditioning. So what I've been seeing lately is that that experience of being able to calibrate to what is and what isn't, if mm-hmm. you will, that's all we need.
Uh-huh.
Because in that moment, when there's that's not it, then there's the ability to stop and look for what is it.
Yes, yes. So that really is the important piece, right? Because I project that over that length of practice, the ability to tune into arises. Right, because at some point you don't even register that. It takes a lot of paying attention to have life's still small voice say no.
Yeah.
And then it takes a lot more attention to actually not go into conditioned mind at that point.
Exactly.
And go to that place of yes, I registered the but I don't know what to do, and so let me turn to that in order to assist me to do, because what is available is at that point to pay attention,
that's right,
to not execute the karma
yep.
that will further the karma.
That's right.
But the bamboozle is that because I have to figure it out, then I'm executing the karma that's part of the karma.
Exactly.
Right?
Just a tiny different flavor.
That let me figure this out as opposed to I'm confused. And so what you're tuning into is at that point, don't send the email.
Or articulate that I hit a stopping point. Or, I mean, there's so many choices.
Right, and mm-hmm. I would say that present moment place of going to your experience mm-hmm. is what we're always encouraged to do.
Yeah.
Right? Because what the response will come back from is knowing you knew the knowing you looked at conditioning and you sent that email anyway, it's not that there's anything in the email that is necessarily not in alignment with life.
Right.
It's just calling the process that went into writing the email.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, as you say that, it really, for me, underscores the practice principle, there are no mistakes.
Yeah.
Because, and when we pay attention, everything enlightens.
Yeah.
Because, at least for me, I've had to do that, each one of those, about 4.5 trillion times in order for that calibration to be there. And then at a certain point, it's the, for lack of a better word, the benefit of not going with the karma. Finally, it becomes clear that far outweighs whatever it is that the I wants by going with the karma.
Yes. Yes, that you have to, the awareness is the repetition that it takes in order to be able to get to the benefit of giving up the attachment to the karma, right?
Yes.
And something you said was really powerful, right, Jen? And this is what we do receive, is you've actually gotten to the place that there are no mistakes. Which is a far more enlightened place to write an email from.
Right, yes. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That it's not just that there's a calibration to the and the calibration and the practice training to pay such close attention, which is also a benefit, that you can recognize it, stop it, not consult the karma, but you've gotten to a place of doing, and maybe it took 4 trillion times to internalize that there are no mistakes.
Yes.
Which is the point of doing the whole thing.
And that's such a good point, right? Because then there is a juncture along the way, at least for me, where sort of I catch on to, oh, well, every single time, I mean, really, what you describe, boy, every time, you know, whatever, a guy comes on the property, sees X,
oh, I knew that.
I thought that was, you know, a million times that went through my head. Didn't, right? And then catch on to that. And so stop, never override that, right? So then start communicating about that. And then that starts to, quote, work. Mm-hmm. So then there's this middle stage of like, wow, that's working, mm-hmm. right? And then I get attached to that, yeah. right? And then it comes around where whatever happens and it didn't work. Oh, shoot, it didn't work. So, you know, there's that middle place of, oh, this is going well, I'm getting it right, I want to get it right. And then we move through that stage to what you're talking about, which is, no, that's no longer the motivation, because that's just the next trap that it's yeah. getting me into.
It's the other side of the duality, the right? It's not working,
right.
or it is working.
right.
But in either case, there is a mistake involved. Mm-hmm. I didn't notice it, I should have said something, or... oh, I noticed it, and now it's not working anymore, or yeah. whatever. But it still comes back to the karma that's actually being worked on mm-hmm. is there are no mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't have to get it right.
Yeah, yeah. And then the final piece, this is the piece that I was looking at this morning, because as I've been playing with this over a fairly long period of time, that always calibrating, never overriding that, then, in my experience, there's this place that's fairly common of, but I'm not getting anything from that. Mm-hmm. So, like, so maybe there's always calibrating to that place, but realizing there's this subtle eye who's watching for, but is anyone noticing I'm doing that? right? Or do I don't even really feel particularly... in this moment, I don't feel that great about that. I'm not inspired by that. I'm not, and to watch, where is that place of, it's like the giving it to life, giving it to God, whatever. I'm not doing it to get something. Mm-hmm. It's just the practice that's there to do. Mm-hmm. And of course, in that, I receive everything. Mm-hmm. Because that's that last subtle place that the eye hangs onto is, I'm gonna do that so that I'll get something. That's where it can take it away.
Yeah, and so to become aware that the eye has an agenda to get something for itself, but to give up that eye, mm-hmm. to let go of the attachment to that eye, mm-hmm. not let go of the attachment to what it wants. That's the other place of confusion, right? Because in some senses, we are doing, the practitioner is practicing for the sake of practicing.
Right.
But the eye is not doing that.
Exactly.
That's right, right?
Yeah.
And so that place of, well, what do I get? You don't get anything.
Right. You don't get anything, you get everything.
You get, well, or everything gets everything.
Yes.
Right? Because that's
yes.
the place where
yes,
it's
exactly.
so difficult,
exactly.
where...
Yeah.
There's still the subtle place
yes.
of, I'm doing this for something,
right.
to be enlightened, if nothing else.
That's right, exactly.
Right?
Well, and I think that was brilliant what you just said, everything gets everything, because the whole point is that the final calibration is there is no I to get it.
Yeah.
But that's what I don't want to give up, right? Well, I want to be the I who gets it.
Yes. Yeah. So maybe,
I mean, I'm not literally saying that that's true, but that's the experience, that's that, you know...
Well, and that's the edge for practice, because the surrender is, if we truly surrender to whatever, the intelligence that animates, mm-hmm. then we surrender the I.
Yeah.
We're not surrendering the object.
Yeah. Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
And that's a very subtle place to watch how we practice with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and that's why that last conversation, I think, was pointing at it, because that's what I project onto that's how it keeps itself, so we catch on to something like calibrating in every moment to the choice that is life, and then how is the I going to deal with that? Well, it's going to come in to say, now I have to calibrate to the right choice in every moment. And it's going to come in to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is just that I have to exist, you know,
yeah.
at any cost.
Yeah, which is why the merit of all good acts I do freely offer to all beings.
Yeah.
It's the same thing of everything gets everything. That I can't actually, when it works,
yeah.
I can't come and receive it.
Yeah, and you know what I see, and I'll just hold this as a poem because I know we've got to move on, but that I think that's that piece of one of the places it can throw a monkey wrench of confusion in there is to try to take everything away. Uh-huh. So in that place of require the starving child to give their food to someone else. Mm-hmm. So that there is something in there that feels really important, that it isn't the same as, you know, let it all go, you get nothing.
Yeah.
Because that would just be another place of putting the human being back in deprivation where it's impossible to...
Yeah, well, it is a koan because it's a very important place to get clear about, mm-hmm. and you can't get clear about it unless you get clear about it,
yeah.
right, from
yeah.
an intuitive perspective.
Yes. Yeah.
Because that starving child and deprivation mm-hmm. implies that we're super identified with conditioned mind. Mm-hmm. It's the only place from which scarcity exists.
Yeah.
So to me, the interesting way to practice with that is to cultivate the receiving of life
yeah.
in parallel to the letting go of ego.
Yes, precisely.
Because there are two separate processes. One is to be able to receive love
yes.
from life.
Yes.
Because then what the ego has less ability to point yes. to its deprivation
yeah.
as what is being let go of.
Yeah.
What we're letting go of that in order to have everything.
Yeah.
And so in whatever way we're practicing with the karma, we have to get clear on the language it's using.
Yes.
Right? So what are my receiving mm-hmm. practices versus what are my letting go practices?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So much to explore in the upcoming email class.
Yes. Yes.
That was very helpful. Thank you.
Anna.
That's really fun because I just saw that very possibility for the first time this week. So I'll tell you what the possibility is. Something I heard in that last conversation. So something that came up in group recently was whenever there's a feeling of compulsion, that's karma. Mm-hmm. And I was seeing just all these places of feeling this compulsion. And noticing that, the possibility that I saw was I don't need to figure out what the compulsion is or figure uh-huh. out what the alternative is. I just need to notice the compulsion and practice not doing it or see what happens when I don't
uh-huh.
do it. Or see
uh-huh.
what else drops in to be available.
Okay.
Because I noticed that there's the compulsion to do something and then the compulsion to figure out
what it is. What
it is.
Uh-huh.
And the compulsion to report what I've seen about what the compulsion is.
Yeah, let me catch up with you because that's a very important process. So noticing that all compulsions are karma, or at least we can be suspicious that they are.
Right. I heard the suggestion in group from the guide that
yeah.
that was a place
to look.
And so there was a looking.
And what is not, what if we go back to what Rebecca was saying, is as soon as you see the compulsion, then it's the conditioned way of practicing with it is to avoid it or to get it over with. But what you're noticing is the compulsion to analyze
mm-hmm.
the compulsion,
yes.
which is not reported as a compulsion. But once we catch on that the real karma is to notice the compulsion, to analyze the compulsion, and to report on the compulsion, mm-hmm. then at that point, when we let go those two things, we're really letting go of the compulsion, on
mm-hmm.
acting on the compulsion,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can I give an example?
Yeah.
So I've noticed that there's this karma that, so what it says it wants is support and connection and security and communication, like that. And what I notice is that there's a compulsion to do everything that's going to push that away or somehow create the opposite of that experience. And I notice a compulsion, so when I'm, you know, offered the chance to write an update on something that's going on, a compulsion to write a War and Peace length update.
It feels like to be the sort of the culture from which you report.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. So I noticed that's a compulsion. I have that feeling sometimes with it, or have had before there was more awareness brought to it. Every time I sit down, this is what happens. I can't stop doing it. And there might be some awareness that I keep doing it, but I can't stop. It feels necessary every time in a new, real way to write more of these in this update for some reason. And then what that creates But this end is making it a very big deal.
Yes.
So it creates a level of...
You have to produce this piece of literature that is lauded and wins the prize every time.
that people will be writing dissertations about with every text message, you know. And so I laugh because it's so unsustainable.
Yeah.
And such a builder of pressure and stress.
And paralysis, though.
And paralysis. Mm-hmm.
Especially because it has to be literature level quality.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. And so that's what goes on at this end. And then, you know, who wants to read War and Peace length update? So there's that, like, unsustainability on both ends. And...
And the important part is that it is War and Peace every single time.
Yeah.
It's different if it's an original piece of literature that you're composing in every text.
Yeah.
But what we forget is the reporting is of the same story.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, exactly. With subtle, just enough to make it feel like it's necessary to report this nuance of it.
That's right.
Because it feels, within the compulsion, it feels important and different.
That's right.
Even though from the outside it's so obvious.
It's always the same.
It's always the same. And we think, you know, it's that back to that thing of we think we're so, complex and...
We don't.
Mm-hmm. No. In the...
It yes. does.
It does.
Right?
And so there was just an awareness of, okay, that's a compulsion. And then there was the awareness of the figuring out, I mean, I could report a War and Peace length report on what I'm seeing about that compulsion.
Yeah.
And there was also just the refraining from that.
We have to, maybe it's the karma is just the War and Peace reporter.
Yeah.
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 It goes back to that story about the snakes, right? And the woman who was told, whatever you do, don't ever talk about them until I come back.
Right.
And pay really close attention.
Yeah. So it was just a kind of lightening up and seeing the possibility of just not going with that compulsion, not going with the compulsion to do that, not going with the compulsion to figure out all of the nuances of the compulsion, and just do it because this is one of the biggest ways that I get taken out of the present moment is the composing in the head.
Yeah.
There was a really helpful call on Open Air a couple of months ago where somebody was talking about, you know, they've got a call to make to a customer and they start in the head with, and I'm sorry to bother you, but no. and that was just a really clear mirror to see that process here. Because what it does is it takes... So there might be some sort of intuitive sensing of something, and then that goes into the composing, the communication about it, that takes me further away from that intuitive sensing and gets it all scrambled in. Well, what do I think I need to say, or what do I project they want to hear, and all like that.
Mm-hmm.
And just causes this intense suffering because I'm leaving intuitive knowing so
completely. You know,
drastically, so completely.
Yeah.
And then, of course, not yet fully living in the context of there are no mistakes, there's then that reinforcement that there's a mistake. And mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if I'm hearing what you're saying is there's very much the awareness of the sense that, of the intuitive sensing of the moment that can get reported on, that gets translated into the karmic impulse.
Yes.
And that karmic impulse is many compulsions.
Yeah.
And what you're looking at is if you don't follow the initial compulsion, then you also cut off all the compulsions associated, mm-hmm. you know, further back, that mm-hmm. if I don't have to write War and Peace, and if I don't have to report War and Peace on what I saw,
mm-hmm.
and then I don't get paralyzed by it, and I don't get caught in the composing of the reporting,
yes.
then there's much less suffering, because I also project that there is a conflict, right? There's an awareness that is aware that all of this is going on, but you're in the momentum of the compulsion to such a point that you're not able to exit out of it.
Yeah.
So here's something fun.
Tell me.
What are the Japanese traditions? Maybe you'd like to go into haikus.
Haikus. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the haiku is perfect.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
And I had a haiku moment.
Okay.
Just the other night where I was taking out the trash, and usually the way I walk around the building is around the right side to get to the back to take the trash out. But somebody just dropped in, go around the other way. I walked around the other way and saw the full moon reflected in the pond.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was
a
Dogen moment.
Dogen moment,
yes. Yeah, that's fun.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, and it's, to me, it ties back to that earlier conversation. We don't know this, but it's speculated by those people who purport to know, right, that karma is just is a groove. It's a samskara. It's something that has been deepened over and over time.
Yes.
So the groove doesn't disappear, yes, even if we choose not to walk around the groove, walk down the groove. Huh. I mean, the groove may not become so deeply rutted if we don't use it, but it never disappears. Mm. So not giving into a compulsion allows us to sidestep it in some way, and we encounter it again, and we don't give into it. We just choose another, a path that allows us to see the moon reflected in a dewdrop, as opposed to going the same way we've been going all the time to take out the garbage.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I have that sense of excitement and curiosity to see what it's going to be like, because there's a growing ability to recognize the compulsion. So
there's a growing ability to recognize the compulsion, and I project the excitement is what Jen was pointing at, which is in that moment of intuitive sensing, to be able to learn a language of life that always changes, instead of that repetitious, old, long, boring piece of literature that we've been carrying around with us for so long. That not to leave this is the most exciting thing possible.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you. Therese, and then Philip.
So I've been looking at judgment, and the place that I've been looking at, because it's very clear what judgment is to someone in here, right? And then it became apparent that it sort of dropped in, like, well, what about compliments?
Huh.
Right? Like, oh, that's not a judgment. And I was like, oh, yes, it is. Like, there's this sense of, like, a judgment is something that has a negative connotation to it. Mm-hmm. So if I'm saying something positive, though, then that's not a judgment.
Uh-huh.
And yet it is. Like, I'm seeing how conditioning is using that as, so this is how I was seeing it. And so maybe I'm still a little, like, I'm not quite sure about it. So I've been noticing that I'll get little reports, like, oh, you did a really good job on that. Like, oh, you didn't use it with the kids right now. That was awesome. Like, oh, you were, you know. And all of a sudden I'm like, is that coming from a helpful place?
Yeah.
Or is that a judgment? That's keeping that system intact. Mm-hmm. That's keeping the, I'm always watching you to see what you're gonna do. Are you gonna lose it? Or are you gonna, you know, be a good mom and be in the present moment and not lose it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it just be, I just like, and I, and there's part of this is like exposing it. Like, there, like, this feels like it's been this little secret. Like, I've been giving you really good tips on how to be a really good person. And I was like, ooh, I think I need to talk about this in group. Like, I need to bring this to the light, because that's judgment. Like, I didn't get it, really, until we were looking. And then, of course, on my tea bag, it said, because when you come on retreat, you read tea bags. The difference between a weed and a flower is a judgment. That's it. That is it.
So are you seeing that the same voice that criticizes you also compliments you? Is that what you're actually
seeing? See, that's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm getting at. I think that's what I'm getting at, is that it's the same one, just being like, oh, well, good job this time. Like, there's always that sense of, like, but I don't know about next time. Like, I don't know. And it, and what I realize, though, it's keeping me locked into always wondering, like, okay, am I going to, oh, my gosh, what are they going to do right now? Am I going to be the right person for it? Rather than letting it, just the moment present itself, and wherever, you know, like letting life lead instead of that voice.
Yeah, and I think that that is such an important point, which is to get curious about it, right? That light drops in something like a weed and a flower, and you go, oh, wait a minute. What is judgment? I'm curious about the process that assumes it knows about judgment. And then when we develop that curiosity, then you get to see, oh, well, it's the same voice that's appreciating me or complimenting me as is criticizing me. Do I really want to be in relationship to that voice? And you're actually paying attention to determine whether it's a intuitive sense of appreciation,
right,
or a conditioned conversation that is that the attention is tuned into.
Yeah, like, who did it come from? The
controlling you,
or did it come from?
Yeah,
because there are sense. Now I get a sense of, like, there were times when I was really like, oh, I'm really proud of you for that. Like, that was a really, you know, like, that took a lot to be able to, and that didn't come from that judgment place.
Yeah.
It just really came from this place of like, whoa, I really appreciate that you had, you know, the whatever to be able to do something differently than what I normally would have done.
Yeah.
You know, and. Yeah. And that does feel different.
But yeah, and I think that that's what we start to get a sense of in our experience, right? When we talk about calibration, it's when am I calibrating to conditioned mind, and when am I calibrating to life, and what is that experience like?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And then what came up with that was trust.
Uh huh.
And how much. Like when I was recording, I think it was last night, I was recording about the deer and how close, I was just walking along the path and the deer was like right there. The tick could have just flown right onto me from it. And it trusted that I was not going to harm it.
Yeah.
And I really got to that place like, there's so much trust here, like in this literal place, and then like in, and then I have to own that I'm going to trust that everything from this retreat, everything is gonna, you know, go carry forth, pay, you know, continue on, and then I'll trust the what, you know, who's saying what, you know, and be
That's
curious
right.
about who is saying what.
Well, the trust is, I think it's that faith, right, that your continued experience has been that life reveals itself to you over and over and over again. However that shows up for you, right? Whether it's watching this and going, I understand that that's critical. Oh, now I understand that that's appreciative. Oh, now I understand I don't want to listen to either of those, right? And now my experience with this deer puts me in touch with an intuitive sense of a relationship with life that will always guide me because in a way that's beneficial to me. It's never going to harm me. I project, that's what you projected onto the deer.
Right.
Right. There's nothing in life here that's going to be harmful.
Yeah.
And that was what the deer embodied for you. A complete sense of trusting that life would not hurt it.
Yeah.
And for you to find that calibration, that way in which you can live from that place.
Right. Right, because that's what conditioning is always doing, is presenting the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
You know, middle of the night, oh my gosh, what's happening? and then seeing through that, because now, you know, as I was pointed out earlier, it's not as big, it's not as in my face, you know? And so the subtlety of it, though.
The stillness that allows us to, or putting ourselves in this kind of environment where it's very loud, the silence really amplifies what does not have our best interest versus what does.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And to me it's a lovely place in practice as we move to that sense of trust to know that you can actually, if you tune into it, the information is just information. It's completely neutral.
Right.
Yeah. Right? If you need to know something, it says that. Oh, you know, Therese, I'm not going to harm you from the deer, right? You can relax. Or whatever it is, that life needs to communicate. Mm-hmm. The information does not have an, it's not loaded. And that's what we begin to trust, our ability to be able to receive any information, quote, whether it's criticism or complimentary. It's that the process that divides that, that we lose interest in.
Right.
And develop the ability to be with whatever we get.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the discrimination we develop.
Thank you.
Well, I was just, was dropping in during the conversation, mainly the karma conversation. Uh-huh. Is that it seems, as I look over the the practice I've done, that that karma ends when we stop caring about it. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just what it is, and you see that rut, or we're going, and it's like, I think this is what we were saying, the whole. It's just so, we don't want it, it's fighting it. And then as soon as we realize, it's because it's, when you get to the point where I don't care, there's no I to care. That's the thing. It's not like there's an I that doesn't care. It's just like it's all dropped. And we just, that path isn't that interesting anymore.
Uh-huh. So let's see, because you said a couple of very, very interesting things. So the experience of the rut's there, and when we stop caring that the rut exists, the true place that the karma ends is when there's no one to care about it.
Right.
Rather, because I project what you're saying is if we have, it's like, oh my God, I yelled at her again, and I have this karma towards anger, mm-hmm. right? And so then the karmic response to that karma that maintains it is, I will never yell again, right? Or I'm a bad person for yelling, right. Or why on earth can I not get over anger?
Yeah.
Which all maintains the karma, which we think is getting angry, not having the self-hate, not having the avoidance, not having the, can we get over it already, right?
Right.
And so what you're pointing at is, when we are angry, then we're angry. And there isn't that conditioned, all the set of conditioned karmic reactions that goes around that.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing to maintain because it's just what went through.
Right.
And when something just goes through, it doesn't become the person to whom it happened that has to make a difference to it. Is that the first point you were making?
Yes, it just doesn't, there's just no tug of war.
Yes, there's no resistance.
When you're saying that, it sounds like when Sherry says, we get up in the morning and say, whatever, mm-hmm. and go to bed and say, oh, well. it's just that we're living the life.
You're being lived.
We're being lived, and it's interesting all day what we're going to be lived into and
yes.
how we're going to be lived into.
Yes.
And because I hear, we can hear the voices saying, the setup, all right, this time I'm really going to be good, or something
yeah,
like that,
exactly.
Like when we were kids, okay, I'm going to really be good today.
Yeah.
Smash.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I hear the setup a lot of times, and now, with practice, we know exactly what that setup is.
Yes, well, and to take that analogy, it's, I'm going to be good. The reason the crash occurs is that you are good.
Right.
What you do does not indicate your goodness or not. And there's a conditioned world out there that's very willing to crash you.
Yes.
Right? Which has not got anything to do with you being good.
No, exactly. But it's conditioning that's saying that,
yes.
Of course. And,
yes.
Oh, I'm going to be good. And then, and it's just waiting for the instance where, we're going to crash so it could say, point out, see, you weren't. Now, it seems like when that voice is just completely ignored, knowing, and we go on about our life, then there's nothing to crash into. I mean, there's no I to crash.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no I to crash. And I think what you're pointing at is that place where we get to where It simply is.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with any of it, and there's no desire for it to be different than it is.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And it's and what we, how we practice with all that, you know, whether it's spirals or intuition, all that stuff, it's just fun.
It's
you know,
fun.
Just take it at all, at least for me, all the different angles.
and it takes
pay attention
such a,
to.
Yeah, it, all of the tools, all of our images become ways with ways that we make sense of. It's fun. It's a framework of what's going on.
Yes.
Yeah. This is the part in the play that I've gotten. Today is this is my role. So
yeah.
Let me go on the stage
yes,
and
I got the image right then to Indiana Jones stepping out into
yes.
nothing. You know, and what's going to be there next?
What's going to be there next? The sense of fun.
Be open to it. And as soon, and even St. Ignatius says this, going back to the Christian part, that it's the spirit of disturbance that gets us. Anything goes, so to speak, and if that spirit of disturbance, he called it, and we would call it ego, that, you know, and the devil, all that, but if that spirit of as soon as that arises, we can know. That's our clue. That's my clue.
Yeah.
If I'm being disturbed.
Way is easy for those who don't have any preferences.
Yeah. It's just the eye just popped in. Okay.
Yeah.
Eyes disturbed. Yeah.
Eyes disturbed.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Susan.
So I was looking this morning at... So the conversation, I had not heard that, oh well, whatever, actually, in all these years. So the image that stood out to me was there were two facilitators the first day, and we were prepared, as you know, right? But I think there's a new little Zen story of two little monks facilitating, and they have their little piece of paper, and they're just like, you got the story? You got the story? Yeah. And then they told the story and facilitated the thing, which is very different than I, you know, that Mary and Martha thing. I tend to be, I'm not an oh well whatever kind of gal most of the time. Let's just put it that way. You know, and I was so struck by that it all works in oh well whatever. That we prepare. I mean, we were, you know, as you know, we were prepared for a little retreat. But that there really is a, you prepare, you know, it's kind of that, what we were looking at, kind of that Mary, Martha in action. That at some point, preparation is just the next thing. So we're just preparing, you know, it's the, get the email, oh yeah, that's what I, and then you, but my thing I noticed, because I have a planner that plans and prepares, like before I came on retreat. Everything's written down so they don't forget. And so I noticed that I was practicing with, when I get identified with that, letting her be right there and being here. And there was a great relief in not having to, in being able to love that part of me, but not having to operate from that.
Yeah.
And knowing that it's all perfectly perfect.
Yes.
And somebody, you know, you're pointing at the walk around the thing and there's the moon, you know, that I didn't know that before, you know? I didn't know that before practice. I really thought I had to be tight and appropriate and good and all those things, you know, prepared is a big one. So it's just helpful to one more time see it.
Yeah, well, what I think you're pointing at, right, Susan, that in practice, all we're trying to do is be present. You can't be prepared for the moment. Because the moment never existed before you got there. Right?
Yes. Well, I know that in theory, of course.
Yes. that's what's dawning for you isn't watching the two little monks facilitating who were completely prepared, but they were present.
Yes.
They were present to whatever was brought into the room,
right?
For what the room was. So in that moment, there was a confluence of things. that allowed for, we say insight needs experience. So yes, there was a curriculum,
yes,
and there was flexibility to be present to how to mold the curriculum to the facilitators as well as to the room. So it's an important thing that you're pointing at, which is, yes, we can plan, but ultimately it doesn't matter how well you wrote the checklist before you came on the property. You have absolutely no control, I project, over what's going on in your house. Right. Yes. At some point you left and you're here. Here you have food and you have a curriculum, and that's what's there for you now. There's a deep letting go of, I've done my best, and then I actually don't have any control.
And the thing that I think I got is, and it's wonderful.
Yes, it's liberating.
It's liberating, I tell you. Liberating, you know, and so much contentment.
Yes.
In just, just being here and doing.
Yes, and then, and it's beautiful what you said. There's nothing, I can relate to the planning part, right? Which is, it's important to organize, because it's a gesture of caring. It's not, oh well, or whatever.
Right. Yes.
Every moment is a moment of wholehearted caring for whatever it is that you're doing. That manifests as planning.
Yes.
What this takes that as is control over.
Yes.
Not just being with.
Because there could be, right, I planned, I mean, like, yes, I did, and then I drive down and I say, oh, whatever.
Come on. In other words, it's all up to God at that point.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Right?
Yes.
And if we trust that,
yes,
it's always going to go well.
Yes. Yes. If I'm in, oh, well, whatever.
That's right.
Right?
Yes.
If I'm not in, oh, well, whatever.
If we're in that judgment, if we're allowing
judgment, and I drive up today and I'm like,
I have to drop into the let me hug these children.
I know. Yeah. Yes. Which, you know, you would think would be easy. But even when they were here yesterday, I saw myself, you know, I'm hugging, and then I'm like, did David get off okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you take a picture? I didn't say that. I only said, and she's like.
She just said, uh-huh. No, but, and it's important for us, it's a really important moment to parse, right? Which is that, did he get off okay is love.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks.
Not getting that, not letting self-hate take that assessment to that's control. Yeah.
Which is what you were pointing out earlier, right? The problem is not the compulsion, yeah, it's the judgment over, or
that's
the,
right,
hating the...
Or as Flip was pointing out, that I have to avoid the karma. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Oh dear, oh no, I did it, I asked if he...
Yeah.
Completely forgetting what you just said, which is...
I love you, I want to know if you're okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. And that's our time. Thank you, everyone.